Welcome again. You're listening to the second episode of What's Your Problem? The Aussie Men's Health Podcast. I'm journalist Nikki Markovics, and in the last episode, we unpacked the state of mental health for Australian blokes. This time round, we're focusing on physical health. I'm again joined by a stellar panel. With me, AFL legend Brendan Favola, the very brilliant comedian Will Anderson, and Beyond Blue lead clinical advisor, Dr. Grant Blaschke. Later on, we will have a quick chat about why gents are statistically less likely to go and see a doctor. First up, though, I'd love you guys to have a listen to what other men out there said when I asked them if they feel they're getting enough exercise.
Personally, I could do more, but yeah, I try and do as much as I think I can fit in a week sometimes, and then other times I know I've really been quite lazy, but I think I notice a big difference when I do it. I'm a lot happier. I feel healthier. I feel better about myself, and ultimately my mood's better and I just have a better day.
Grant, can I ask you first? You know, in the first podcast we talked about this idea of, you know, men feeling they have to go and exercise physically to look good. What about the relationship of exercise and mental health?
Yeah, it's a really good point. So, I mean, as you say, from the physical point of view, in Australia, you know, we're worried about obesity, diabetes, strong bones, everything. Lots of good reasons to do sport, right? But there's quite a lot of evidence now coming out that exercise is really good for mental health. Not too surprising. You know, you burn up all that adrenaline. We think it might improve some of the brain chemicals. And, you know, there's a lot of studies now showing that regular, frequent exercise is great for your mental health. As a doctor, when I see patients, before we get into anything fancy about psychologists or maybe medicine, I'm like, right, are you doing any sport? You know, you actually got a routine. So I think that's really important. Easy to say, the practicalities then of, well, how do you do sport? You know, I asked my Uber driver on the way here, do you do much exercise? He just laughed. So, you know, he couldn't see how he could fit.
But exercise can just be walking down the street, doing things, being active. It doesn't have to be physical. Because I know for me, finishing footy, you're always up, you're always doing something. And I didn't have a job for 4 years, so I literally just played golf or sat at home or went to the pub. That's all I did. And I got myself into a real rut because it was like I wasn't exercising any of my body at all, and I was just down. But then as soon as my day got filled and I was up and about and I was going to work and I had things to do, I had errands to run, I felt alive again. It was really strange, but obviously it's obvious if you sit at home. But I thought if I was sitting at home relaxing, I'm relaxed. This is cool. I'm having a good time.
What do you do now, Fev? Because you do breakfast radio, which is, you know, weird hours.
Weird hours,
of
yes.
the day. Yep. You tend to, when you do breakfast radio too, you always tend to have an extra meal in your day because you eat early in the morning.
I'm so fat.
And you get tired later in the
yes,
day.
Yes.
So how do you balance getting some exercise in your day now?
Well, I've got a baby now, which is great because I go home and look after Bub. So that keeps me active all day. So my naps are gone. When she has a quick 10-minute, I just lay with her. But that keeps me really active. I take her for walks because she loves going outside. But pre-baby, I get home, I've got a routine. Alex and I will go out for lunch or we'll do something. We'll go for a walk and then I'll probably watch the basketball or do something, watch something on TV for an hour or two. Then I pick the kids. I walk to get the kids, pick the kids up. When the kids come home, I'm active with them, cook dinner. So I'm always trying to do something because it's pretty easy as a breakfast show host, as you know, Will, to get into that, I just go home and relax and sit on the couch and watch a bit of news and see what's floating around and wake up, have something else to eat, because you can get into that. But I thought to myself, I'm not going to get back into that because I try to get a game of golf in a couple of times a week. What do you get out and about? Or?
Well, I got rid of my car. And
I know, I see you walking all the time.
Yeah, and so that's basically my exercise because I have osteoarthritis in my hip, so I can't really do like anything too physical, but I walk everywhere. Yeah. So, you know, I live, you know, 15 minutes from work, but if I'm going from one thing to another, I'll just put it into my day of going, okay, that thing's half an hour away, so today I'm going to walk to that thing and I'm going to walk home from that thing, and that'll be like an hour of walking, you know, to get there and there. And if I walk to work in the morning, that's another half an hour. And, you know, during the day, I'll try to get about 2 hours of walking in during the day sometimes, but it'll just be, oh, I'm going to pop down to Coles.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
that's
like, it's 10 minutes down there, it's 10 minutes home, but I'll walk both ways rather than take the car, and then that way I'm moving.
Yeah, so I think, you know, what we're talking about, this you know, technically they call it active transport, where you actually make sure you're moving around rather than hopping in a car. So more public transport, more bikes, more walking, really good for your health. Similarly for a lot of people that sort of stuck at desks all day, you know, sitting, not great. Stand-up desks are good. So you can definitely incorporate lots of exercise, and it doesn't mean you have to be in the gym. You can incorporate part of your life for sure.
Because I can't physically go. Well, I go to the gym. I wake up too, so my body's cooked from all the hits from footy. Sorry, my knees, my groins, my ankles. I'm like a 60-year-old man after I do gym, but the walking to the shops, so simple. You go to the shops and feels good. Like you're like strutting along. But mine used to just be going to the fridge to get a beer, back to the couch, looking after my exercise but not my health. Because I did blow out. I blew out to about 130 kilos, which is huge. But then I went on a diet, and when you're at that weight, I didn't feel good at all.
Did you feel like there was a real connection between your physical state and your mental state?
100%. When I got back down to sort of under 110, I felt so much better. I felt like I could do more. I wasn't worried about the clothes I wear, because you start to get that nothing fits, you know, when you can't do the buttons up, and mentally does get you. And when you go out, people won't ask how you are. Oh, geez, Fev, you put on some weight.
Thanks, mate.
Hey, how you going?
Thanks for that.
You've been in a good paddock. Like, I used to cop it all the time. I want to ask you a question, Doc, about social media. I've got four daughters. They're on it. And I hate that they're on it, because I read all this stuff, you know, the Instagram, people posting photos in bikinis and at beaches, and, you know, people doing this at gym and how healthy they are, and look at my fit bod. And people look at that, especially on Twitter, but they're talking about this is what the world we're coming to. I'm asking a doctor this. They think about taking likes off Instagram posts so people don't have to read it. So you can just post anything, but you don't get likes. People live for likes. People get upset when they don't get likes. People take their lives when they get trolled. Do you think social media should ban comments and likes and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, look, it's such a good point. I think we're living through the most incredible social experiment, right? I think if someone got on our trains at the moment from another planet and they go, what happened?
But even with social media, to add to Fev's point, is there also a disparity between what we think people's lives are like? Because on social media, people portray their lives as being perfect, and here's this great snap of me from the best possible angle, and here's me with this new thing, and I'm on this holiday, and I'm by this pool.
I'll give you an example.
This is my life. Whereas, like, you're living this ordinary life, but they probably are as well.
I'll give you an example. My daughter posts this photo, right? She's doing some campaign. She's getting paid for it. She's standing up in her room in her bikinis, like trying to look $1 million. I walk up 10 minutes later. She's sitting there with a bag of chips, the hot chips, in her tracksuit. And I said, this is the real life.
Yeah.
Sitting in her messy room with clothes all over the floor. She had one corner of her room looking absolutely spectacular where she took it, and behind it looked like a tip. So I filmed it and said, this is the real life. She's like, take it down. No, don't portray something that you're not.
Do we feel like some of the mental health stuff is connected to that we think other people are living better lives than they actually are?
Yeah, look, I think the whole impact of social media on mental health is, you know, of great concern at the moment. You know, we've got young women particularly looking at, you know, images which, you know, unrealistic or unhealthy. And I think, as Fev said, a lot of the kids' experience now, it's not that the social media sort of supplements it or documents it. It is the thing. Like, that's why you went there, so that you got the photo, you got the pic. So I think that the more we can sort of educate kids about how to handle social media, there's one particular group called Project Rocket who are amazing. These young girls set it up, and they're travelling all around the country, like, talking to kids, how do you live in this hyper-tech world? Like, how do you manage Instagram posts? How do you manage, you know, sexting, this whole complex world that they're in now? And I think it's 1,000,000 miles from where I was at when I was at school.
Fev, just on the point, I know you were saying about your daughter, and I wanted to just bring it back to the footballer and the athlete side of things, sports career. And in terms of, I guess, this pressure to look a certain way and the anxieties and the attitudes around that as well, has Mia's partner ever come to you looking for advice? I mean, he's also someone in the spotlight along with Mia. He's a young footballer. Has he sort of spoken to you about any of those pressures?
He actually got dropped a couple of weeks ago. So he's never been dropped before. So he didn't take that too well, where I had to sit, I sat him down, and obviously I had a pretty good footy career, but I threw it away because of me being stupid. So I've learnt. So I think I'm a pretty good teacher to teach, sit down and have a chat. And I just said, mate, you got to get into the club and do some extras. You know, I asked why he got dropped, and he told me why he got dropped, and he was just really flat. And he doesn't have his family here, so I'm sort of his family. So I sat him down, and Mia was there, and she's like, you need to speak to him, Dad. I'm like, all right, I'll speak to him. And I just said, you need to do extras, do whatever, because he's a premiership player in his first year, I think he played in a premiership, and he's just turned 22, and I said, mate, you've got to be out in the ground, and you've got to look at your opponent and think, I've done everything possible. I've done more than him this week. And every player in your club, I said, Dustin Martin is a Brownlow medalist. He has a bit of an aura about him that he does things that he shouldn't be doing when he plays football off the field, but when he is off the field, I've got a best mate who he boxes with 3 days a week, 7 o'clock at night, every single week. No one would know that about Dusty, because he does it because he knows he gets fit. And even Daniel's like, does he really? And I'm like, yeah, because he does things outside the footy club. So that's what you need to do to become more of a senior player. So he did, and he got back in within 2 weeks. So he listened, which was good. But the pressure's obviously, it's big in football. He's not really on social media. He plays Fortnite. And that's another issue, Fortnite. My God, video games. My kids go nuts. As soon as they play Fortnite, they change mentally. It's weird.
I love that you are offering him this advice, though. I reckon that's great.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, for you to be at the point in your life where you're like, here's some mistakes that I made,
yeah,
and I'm willing to share that with you so that, you know, you can learn from, you know, what I've been through. I just reckon that's an amazing thing as well, your evolution.
Yeah, I feel like I wanted to, but I didn't feel like I had to. Like, Mia's like, can you speak to Daniel? And I'm like, yeah, of course I will, because his parents live up in the Tiwi, so he hardly sees them because they don't often come down. He'll talk to them, but it's easy to talk on the phone and sit there and be distracted. But we sat down at the table and I had a little chat, and I think he took it in, and I felt good that I was trying to teach him, and whether he takes it on board or whether he doesn't, but hopefully he just takes a little bit, which he did, and he got back in the side. And, you know, I'm glad that I got that relationship with him, and Mia was happy as well. So, it's good to be able to relay that, because I have lived a pretty amazing life, ups and downs, so I feel like it was good.
But I would have thought that people also appreciate your story more and are willing to sit down, because when somebody's made a mistake themselves, or if somebody's buggering up at work themselves, you know, like, that's getting dropped, that's what it means, right?
Yeah.
You're not good enough to be in the first at the moment. You're buggering up a bit
of
work.
Which is a shock.
It's hard to go to someone who you think's perfect and has always done the right thing. I think, you know, going to somebody who's gone, I've, you know, been at the top of this, but I've also, you know, been on the other side of it as well. You're a good person to be able to,
don't worry, I started with 1-2 Coleman's, 3 All Australians. and he did turn around and say, well, I've won a premiership. And I said, well, you win, but that's how it started. So we started off with a little joke, which was good.
And Fev, you're pretty active on social media, and you made your journey with your weight loss pretty public also. Do you reckon that men are getting a rough ride on socials with regards to their appearance?
I did a rave on the radio about it, being fat shamed. I'm like, if this was a woman putting a picture up, no one will say anything. As soon as I put it up, oh, geez, you got fat. Like, it hurts.
It is part of our, and look, I think we've probably all been guilty of it as blokes, right? Mm. You know, part of the way that we have talked to each other. And I don't think there's a very healthy, you know, some of the best times in life is when you're with your friends and you're all, you know, having fun at each other's expense, you know, and it goes around the...
Good banter.
Good banter between each other. But I do think as men, we often forget that sometimes those things can be really hurtful if the person has an issue with that in their life.
I was in Yarrawonga and I walked up. I was up there for Easter with my family. I just had they got amazing chicken parmas up there at the pub. And I walked out and this lady literally, she would have been 30, 40 years old, goes, are you Fev? And I go, yeah. She goes, pooh, geez, you put on some weight. And that was it. And I looked at my wife and I was like, thank you very much. Palmer was great. But it's like they just feel like they can say that. It's not cool. Will loves it.
I mean, I do. Yeah. I do enjoy the image of an old lady just
have a ham at me.
Fat shaming you on the way out of the pub.
In a little country town. I'm like, I'm safe here, surely. God, anyway.
And it's good that you guys can laugh about it in this space. But I guess as well, the scrutiny side of things, which is something you've spoken on quite a few times before and obviously right now, Will, have you experienced those pressures in terms of looking good? Like, it's not obviously the same physical sense that, you know, the shape Fev needs to be in as an athlete, but you're on stage every night, you're performing. What are your experiences with the scrutiny, the pressures of looking a certain way as a male?
I must admit that, like, you know, because you're not, like, you know, your job doesn't rely on your physicality.
I mean that very kindly as well.
No, it's true, though. I mean, often I think, you know, if I really blow out, I'll get a whole, you know, 20 or 30 minutes of new jokes.
Yeah, and it'd be heaps funny.
Yeah, exactly. You know, some people have had whole careers, you know, based on jokes about their weight.
Yeah.
But so you don't have that pressure in that way. But in a physical sense, I know that there is a big link between, because when the osteoarthritis started in my hips, I was quite young for something like that to be happening. And for me, it was the standing on stage, the flying from place to place, being in a car. And I was suddenly realizing that just to do my job, you know, my body was breaking down, and then I suddenly started to realize that it was having a massive effect on my mental health as well. I was feeling depressed because I did not feel that my body was able to let me do my job. So the connection between having your body right, even though my job doesn't seem like it's about my body was affecting.
It'd be the last thing you think about.
Right.
If you said to me, I can't work because my body, I'd be like, oh, what do you, drive a car all day? Do you sit behind a desk? Do you play footy? Do you play sport? No, I'm a comedian. Yeah. It'd be the last thing you think of.
Right. But the minute you can't sleep or the minute that, you know, you don't feel like you can stand comfortably for an hour on stage or these sort of things, it's very hard to be funny in those situations when you're feeling terrible.
Just the sleep issue that you mentioned is another angle on the exercise, because a lot of people that I see with mental health issues, the joker in the pack is they can't sleep.
Yeah, that's me.
Right.
I could never sleep.
So what happens with you when you're stirred up?
Like, it used to be a running joke on my radio show that I watch everything on TV because I don't sleep. But since I've been active and doing all that stuff, I'm in bed at like 7:30 and I'm out and I sleep all the way through. And I've never done that in my whole footy career. I was always bed at 10, 11. I was up at 2, 2:30 every single day. But now, like the last 2 years, since I started breakfast radio, or three, but probably for two, I literally, because I've been a bit more active and I've lost weight, I sleep amazing. Yeah. Like, Alex is like, you snore now. You never snore. Like, she's like, I'm like, oh, is that because I'm fatter? But I actually snore. And I'm like, I must be having really good sleeps, but I feel so much better in the morning.
Well, we know that we've all got this sort of natural body clock in our heads that's relating to the sun and getting enough sunlight. So, I mean, what Will's doing, walking everywhere, you're getting sun, it's actually setting your normal body clock. So by the time it gets to night time, you have a decent sleep. So that's the other big sort of effect of exercise, which is great from a mental health point of view.
And Grant, with the, like you guys were saying before, obviously you might be feeling your bodies are hurting, your bodies are aching, actually getting from that point to see a GP, to see a doctor, to actually get the checkup was another point I wanted to quickly touch on. Just have a listen to this. We ask guys, do you go and see a GP? Because gents are statistically less likely to see a doctor than women.
I think it lends itself to the same sort of stigma. Just be tough, get on with it. And I mean, I think it might be a generational thing, but I know my father very rarely would see a doctor if something was wrong. And you know, it takes a lot to get in there, and I think that is changing. But I think it is still the case that guys just will ignore things and put things on the back burner and until something gets quite serious, and then they've got no other option.
Men are generally scared, and you find most men are reluctant to go, you know, regularly to the doctors and all that. And I think they're scared of the outcome.
Trying to think, the last time I went to the GP would have been about 6 months ago, and I'd certainly go a lot more frequently now that I'm a husband and a father. It wasn't something that was ever high on my priority list to take care of my health when I was in my bachelor days.
Nah, I only go to the doctor if I'm sick or if I'm about to travel and I need medication or a letter or something.
I've never been for mental health reasons, but, yeah, if I feel that there's something physically unwell with me, yeah, I do go to the doctor. I haven't been for a while.
I did this year because I hurt myself, but in terms of, like, general checkups and mental health, no. am pretty happy most of the time, so I don't need to. But if I felt unwell, then I reckon I would see somebody.
When did you guys last go to the GP?
I'm terrible at going to the doctor. The most manly, cliched manly I am is in going to the doctor. In fact, I have and dentist included, because I have a little bridge on my tooth. I got my tooth knocked out when I was 15. I was meant to get it replaced that year. It's still not been replaced and I'm 45. So that's 30 years I've been putting that off.
Wow.
Like, I now have to go every year for insurance for work. Like, and so I get a checkup once a year. But I had a lump on my neck for years. Which it turns out could have been cancer. It wasn't, luckily, but I didn't get it checked out for like 3 years, this lump on my neck that could have been something really, really serious, just because I was like, oh, well, it'll be fine. You know, everything's going to be fine. I'm terrible at going to the doctor.
Yeah, I'm pretty good, because we had a doctor at the footy club, so I had the doctor every day. So for me, it wasn't too strenuous to go, hey, mate, check up. But I just did a show up in Sydney, the new Real Monty, I think it's called, where we got nude for prostate cancer. And we did an exercise in the middle of Sydney. The eight guys, we all went around and asked different people, went up to men and said, have you checked your balls? It was the most confronting thing I've ever done. Talking to a man about his testicles is a weird, that, especially when you don't know them. And they look at you.
I reckon even if you know them.
Yeah, and even if you know them. But that's the whole stigma around getting, because I think it's a leading cause for death in males, that kills males. I think is the right statistic. More males die from testicular cancer than breast cancer in women. Anyway, so we're walking up to people. It was really awkward. They didn't know what to say, and they had said, no, we haven't got checked, because everyone's got the stigma of you get the finger up the bum, and they don't want to get the doctor to do that. But now it's a blood test. It's all pretty simple. So when I got back from Sydney, it was a couple of weeks ago, my testicles were hurting for some reason. I don't know why. And I went, oh, shit, I think I've got it. So I went to the doctor, Dr. Colin Leong, and I sat down, and he's been my family doctor, and I've just gone to him probably for sleeping pills or whatever. I've never really gone to him for any other any sickness, because if I get a cold, I just get over it. And I said, oh, I've got sore testicles. And I felt really weird saying it to him. He goes, right, I dropped my pants. So I was laying on there, and he's felt them both sides, and it was really weird that I was doing that. But when I left, I went and got a scan, did all that. There was nothing wrong. But the next time I walked in with the doc, I go, g'day, mate. And I was sitting there, because my daughter was getting her 6-month needles. So remember last time I was in here and you felt my balls, just to make it unawkward? And he goes, you just made it more awkward, because I'd forgotten about that. But I did go to the doctor, and men do need to go, because they don't go. And as you said, for a dentist for 30 years, you need to go get checked up. And I'm at that age now where I thought I was bulletproof, and now things are starting to hurt. And I'm like, I'm getting to that age now. I'm nearly 40. I've got four kids. I need to get checked up, because I don't want to, because I think it's 95% chance if you, especially with testicular cancer, if you catch it early, you're not going to die of it.
Correct,
like,
yeah.
So I want to go all the time now. Like, I don't want to die. I want to check my body all the time. So because
your doctor's like, Fev, put your balls back in. I checked them last time. Yeah. I don't need to check them every time you come in, mate.
As a female, it's something that we're taught as young women to, you know, the reproductive system, there's all of that sort of stuff going on. So for us, it's kind of you're forced with making those doctor's visits from a very young age, and you're almost kind of educated and you have to. So to maybe try and get more guys going and more regularly, where would you say would be the first steps?
So look, there's a couple of things. It's true that guys are much less likely to go to the doctor. Mm. And when you think about it, there's lots of reasons for the girls to go. Reproductive issues, you know, maybe picking up the contraceptive pill or pap smears or things. So they're generally coming to the doctors. Even when you've got little babies and things, it's usually the mum bringing them, not always. So they've got lots of reasons to be there anyway. Now, the guys are interesting, right? Because first of all, I'm a bit opportunistic. So if they come in with an ankle sprain or a knee sprain, not all of them have got their own footy doctor, I like take the moment and say, you know what, why don't we just do a bit of a preventive checkup on you? We'll do your blood.
Get your balls
shirt.
Out. Get your balls out.
Fair, put it away.
I know your ankle hurts, but get your balls out.
I think it starts from here.
Yeah, that could be a little
How
bit.
How does your ankle feel if I do this?
Could be a little bit confronting for my poor patients. But the other classic with the guys is two other classics. So they come in, right, and they just say, you know, they're mid-20s and they come in, I'm here for a checkup. And you think, no, you're not. what are you here for? You know, because very often it's a mental health issue or a sexual health issue. And we have what we call a door handle consult. So you're chatting to them about nothing and the consult's not really going anywhere. You're just about to walk out the door. You got your hand on the door handle. They go, oh, by the way, I haven't slept for four nights. Or, by the way, can, you know, you catch chlamydia from doing this? And off you go and you get that conversation at the door handle. So it's certainly a challenge. The other classic that guys do is, my girlfriend said I have to come in, or my wife said I had to come in. Like, they almost need like a permission slip to say, oh, is it okay if I come? Whereas hopefully we could change that. There's not much that surprises GPs out there. Like, you can come up, come in and be very upfront. Like, we're pretty relaxed. We've seen everything. And, you know, if you've got a mental health issue or a sexual health issue, you can be upfront about it.
It is weird, isn't it? That, you know, like, I mean, if your car starts to rattle, we'll take it to the mechanic. But, you know, if our knee's rattling, you know, we're a little more skeptical about it. Yeah, we'll be fine. I'm sure it'll sort itself out. And look, I've been the same. You know, going in, I now have to get a insurance physical every year for my television show, you know, so they can insure me. And the permission that's given me to get treated for things that clearly I should have been going to get treated for regardless is, it's been a real revelation to me how hesitant I have been, because intellectually you can know it, but taking that step to actually go, I'm going to go to someone and say, hey, you know, this isn't working about me, or this isn't working about me. And do you find also that, does Google make a difference in this? Do we find that men sit at home,
dangerous.
They go, you know, I've got this lump or I've got this thing, I'm going to Google it instead of going to see a doctor?
They do. And we call that Dr. Google, and a lot of people come in. I guess with it, it can be useful, but you really want to try and get high quality information. And the risk is that you freak yourself out and you get absolutely incorrect information, and that's very often they come in convinced they're going to die and they're fine.
I think we will leave it there. Thank you, Will, Fev and the doctor. And if you are listening also, thank you to you for tuning in to our second podcast. If you're needing some help or someone you know may be struggling, remember Lifeline's always available 24 hours a day on 131114. You can also reach Beyond Blue online or at 1300 224636. 36. If you happen to miss episode one, you can catch up right now, or you can rush ahead and grab episode three. Both are available on iTunes, or you can download them via the Hit and the Triple M apps.